Hey, Gavin here. Welcome back to the Business Mastermind podcast and to this another episode in the season called Revive. As you know, from having listened to certain episodes in the season, we've talked about sleep. We've talked about how to revive your mindset. We've talked about leadership. What I really knew I needed to cover in this season was very much this topic of happiness. And if you were to think of a word that would most, you know, if there's a spectrum of how you would describe the word happiness, the one that would be probably that came out at the top end of the spectrum is the word bliss. And today I've got the great privilege of inviting back David Taylor, who was one of the earlier, if you've been a fan of the podcast for some time, he was one of the earliest episodes of the show, and also to Claire Carpenter. David and Claire have co-authored a book entitled Bliss, How to Be Truly Happy for the Rest of Your Life. Now, what I love about this book, before I give the stage and allow Claire and David to introduce themselves, is David and Claire come at the world from a very different point of view. David, I've known for a good number of years. I've shared a platform and stage with him. I've worked on client assignments with him. You know, David sees the world through the lens of possibility, potential, and purpose, and about the mindset stuff. And for those of you that have followed me, you'll know there's a greater sort of an affinity in both our approach. It's just that David's a lot funnier than I am. Claire looks at the world through the rigor of science and robust research of the different conditions and the relative merits of different, you know, different kind of like courses of treatments or interventions. You know, it's like, I was reading the book yesterday and I just said before we press record that I gave myself the opportunity, I had a little bit of opportunity yesterday, and I gave myself the opportunity of sitting down with a cup of tea and reading the book in the afternoon, and I loved it. It felt a real treat. And it felt like to me that we were setting, it was like one of us was setting in, there's two parties, two voices in the book, there's the David and the Claire. One sets off from the North Pole and the other sets off from the South Pole, both searching for an answer. And of course, they end up in the equator. Which one is right? And how do we find happiness? How do we find bliss? And as opposed, and what should we focus on? And we end up at a point about what do we focus on in a study of what is right rather than what is wrong.
If you're loving these podcasts, then please do head over to buymeacoffee.com/businessmaster. It's super easy. I promise you, your support really is appreciated. And it helps in the creation of these in-depth masterclasses and interviews to equip you, your team, and your business for growth. If you have supported us already, many thanks. And if not, you can do this by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/businessmaster. You'll also be able to get access to exclusive content from the guests and myself, further insights and information on the featured episodes, and how you can get more access for you and your business.
I'm really excited about this. So Claire Carpenter, welcome to the Business Mastermind podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Gavin. Thank you.
So Claire, you're a psychologist. We're going to remind everybody listening about the distinction between psychologist and psychiatrist in a minute. But you're a psychologist, including having done a good deal of your training with Harvard. So please, would you give yourself an introduction about the work that you do and a bit about your career background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love psychology. It's all about why people do what they do, what makes them tick. And I guess I got into it when I was a teenager, really talking to my mum and saying, oh, this happened, that happened. She's going, well, you know what's really going on there. And for me, it was like discovering this entire parallel world. So yeah, I trained as a psychologist, and it really is fantastic. You can use it in everyday life, just around the table with your friends or at work. And for me, it's all about passing the IKEA tape test, which is, I used to collect tapes from IKEA. And if this was your entire life, so I'm in my 40s now, I'd have to kind of look at this and rip it off and put that bit on the floor because it's gone, can't do anything with it. You're meant to sleep, now I don't, many people don't, but you're meant to sleep a third of your time. So however long you sleep, rip it off, you can't do anything while you're asleep. And then you've got these two little bits of work and home, you're just ending up holding these two bits of IKEA tape, And both have to be amazing and fantastic. And for me, psychology is a lot of the answer that we can make lives truly happy and blissful.
What an amazing analogy. I love that. I love that. David, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Gavin. Follow that, eh? I mean, I've never stolen anything from IKEA.
So, a little bit about your sort of philosophy and an approach in terms of your work, about kind of what drives your sort of your theme to your work.
Well, as you know, Gavin, I'm just a very ordinary guy. I got very, very lucky. I scraped into university thanks to a letter from my dad. I went into the world of IT and discovered that the worse you were at technology, the quicker you got promoted. And I wrote a book called The Naked Leader, which thanks to a certain person who wrote an email to 31,000 students telling them not to buy this book. He was a very prominent professor. He is a very prominent professor. It went to number one. And as a result of that, overnight, I went from having opinions to being treated as some kind of expert, which I'm really not. I don't have any insight. I only have eyesight. And that's our whole approach. Does it work or does it not? We're interested in basically, there's so many. I mean, look at the books behind me. I mean, obviously, they're only borrowed for this podcast from the local library to make me look as if I know what I'm talking about. But basically, they've all got their own opinion, and everyone has, doesn't matter whether it's the world of psychiatry or psychology or just the world of success, everyone seems to have a position where they're right and other people seem to be wrong. And my approach has always been, there's only what works and what doesn't work. And if something works for you, then keep doing it. If something doesn't work for you, then do something different. We're very lucky in Naked Leader. We've been going now for 19 years this year. And I was extremely lucky to meet Claire Carpenter when we started working with her company in EDF. And Claire is an extraordinary, extraordinary person. She manages to make the most complex terms simple. And it's an absolute honor to write a book with Claire, which came about largely because I was doing an event with the NHS.
I was going to ask you about, so what was the genesis then of the book? What was the story that brought, because you were both given a challenge, I hear.
Well, Claire and I decided we'd like to write a book together because we do come at this world from very different angles. I do come at it from the trial and error angle. And obviously, when you work in the nuclear industry, you can't take that to the extreme. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. That didn't work. However, Claire, and I'll say straight away, Gavin, that this is the first book I've written that has got proper academic references, thanks to Claire's research. And the challenge we were given, well, it was really a dinner that I was doing a 2-day event with the NHS Essex Partnership University Trust. Of course, as you all know, these trusts are the size of big companies, that they're massive. And I had a dinner with psychologists and psychiatrists, and they asked me if I had any questions about psychology and psychiatry. And I did. And the main question I had for the psychologist was that phobias you can get a phobia very, very quickly. I mean, psychologists generally agree that you can get a phobia, for example, of flying just by extreme air turbulence, and that can stay with you for the rest of your life. And what I couldn't understand, Gavin, was if you have a part of your brain that can attract a phobia or give you a phobia in a heartbeat, surely there's a part of your brain that can basically remove that phobia in a heartbeat. And the psychiatry angle is very much around, a lot of psychiatry is based on illness, on depression, on bipolar. And yet the World Health Organization, as we say in our book, I hope I've got this right, Claire, they define health as a state of complete physical, mental and social well-being. So it's not a question of, you know, living a normal life, it's actually getting to this thing called bliss. And I introduced this word, I at the time I said it was a concept of bliss. I said, is that possible? And I was generally not put down by the psychiatrist. It was a great evening and everything. And then I discussed this with Claire, and Claire said, yes, I'm up for it. And, I needed Claire, because I needed some real gravitas on my side, really, if we were going to write this book. And I'm pleased to say that some of the psychiatrists and psychologists from EPWT have now read the book, and they absolutely love it. And one final thing on this, Gavin, I think it's time now to put aside people's differences on all of this area. And it's time to find out what works for individual people and because the world, the biggest, you know, parallel virus at the moment to COVID is, of course, mental health. And Claire and I are both absolutely dedicated to getting people to live the rest of their lives truly happy.
Brilliant. And I think there's one of the first messages that comes out in the book is rather than being a study of what's wrong with us, it's about shifting the focus to what's right with us. So, Claire, can you talk to that a bit? The bit that I'm interested from the research based phenomenon is how when psychologists and indeed psychiatrists want to help fix people that are presenting with, you know, mental health issues, mental challenges, it's easy, I'm not articulating my words very clearly, but it's easy to understand how the focus goes on to what's wrong. How difficult in your experience has it been to shift the focus on, well, why are we not looking at what's right, and how do we look at to shift that focus onto what's going well rather than to what's not working?
That's a really interesting question, Gavin, and I think that it is something that's quite endemic in all of Western society. So if, for example, you have a look at our schooling systems, they are all set up to test you against a completely fictional, made up something that you're meant to have achieved, and then you focus on the bits that you're not so good at. And this entire way that our society is engendered and hardwired really then impacts the way that individuals see things, and also it's filtered into science, both psychology and psychiatry. And it's so interesting when you say, well, when you're presented with a person and you want to fix them, I think David and I would both agree that there's nothing wrong with individuals, and it is all about playing to strengths. It is really all about understanding. We've all got superhero strengths. So what are they? So I've got an 8-year-old boy, and he's fantastic in some areas, and some other areas he doesn't have confidence in. And what I love about the place that he goes to school is, actually, you're not going to get better at doing math and doing English. You won't get better at math and English by just doing more of them. It's about engaging the whole child and making sure that they can enjoy their time in the playground and their sports and their time with their friends. You know, looking after the chickens. So I think your question was, how easy is it to turn this on its head? One answer, but two very different outcomes. It's actually very easy, but with the way our society is at the minute, we are hardwired to look at stuff from what we're missing. Whereas if we can shift and look at the things that we're in abundance of, then we can start to unlock real potential.
And the key there, obviously, is being able to shift focus. A core part of the book is built around the Ember model. And there's four stages of events, meaning, behavior and reaction. Event meaning behavior and reaction. So can you just walk us through each of those four stages, event meaning behavior and reaction, and then we can then go on to look at the application of it?
Yeah, certainly. So when you have an event, anything can happen. So I was talking to my hairdresser a couple of days ago. He had an event where a client was late, and he associated that with meaning he's just set up a new salon. And so the meaning that he applied to that was, actually, you know, she's not invested in me, she knows that I'm just starting up. And he got into quite a dark space, so he ended up ringing up his client and having quite a difficult conversation with her. So that was the behavior, and saying, you know that I'm starting up on my own, we've been friends for a long time, I'm very upset. And then that had implications. Whereas actually, she's, you know, he's in the middle of the countryside. And she said, I was trying to get my kids off to holiday camp. One of them was sick. For anyone else, I wouldn't have made the effort. And then I got stuck behind a tractor. I was going to turn back, but you are so important to me that I still made the journey. And that's why I was late. And so that just shows you that how we interpret events can really shape our behavior. And if we just reframe things, that has the opportunity for a massively different outcome.
Can I add to that, Claire, if that's okay?
Yes. I mean,
this is a typical example of the book that in Naked Leader, we had an idea that something was the case. And we really wanted to get sort of the credibility behind it. And the idea was that no event has any meaning other than the meaning you choose to give it. I used to use the phrase, I didn't say she stole the money. Claire geniusly made it. I didn't say she stole his money, I think it was. And by taking that phrase and every different word, it means something slightly different. And this happens, of course, because our brain has one role, which is to keep us alive. Therefore, it wants to conserve energy. Therefore, throughout the day, thousands, some might say millions of times, we're associating things. What's that like? What does that mean? And that's fine when you apply it, say, to this call, that I can see you too, and this is a computer and this is a light. Imagine if I had to each time, if all of us had to redefine what we're looking at. So our lives work on association in order to keep us alive. The downside is it means that we judge things. And we judge things, as Claire has said, and we judge things from our experience, our education, and our imagination. And because we don't remember immediately everything that happened in our lives, imagination plays a big part. And because of the point you made earlier, Gavin, and I understand from Claire that it's something to do with the dinosaur brain, that we, if there's a 50-50 meaning on something, we'll tend to lean towards the negativity for the protection of ourselves. It's very difficult. I mean, Claire said it was simple, and she's right, but simple's not necessarily easy to switch it in that way. And what Claire has done with the Ember model is she's given a working model for real life, for real people in real situations that they can apply, just to get them to have this, what I would call, and Claire and I haven't discussed this, by the way, Gavin, to this degree. What I think Claire's done with the Ember model is she's given us a level playing field, and she's given people that sort of, what would I call it, a gap of infinite possibility. Is this definition you're giving going to help you and other people, or is it not? And I think that's what Claire has done brilliantly with that.
Hey, Gavin here. So let's go back to the Ember model, EMBR, event, meaning, behavior, reaction. And the first two points that we've just covered, the E for event and me for meaning. An event is an event. It's simply what has happened, just an objective description or review of what happened. But meaning, remember that hairdresser story, as human beings, we are makers of meaning. If you find yourself creating a meaning that makes you feel bad, disappointed, upset, angry, ask yourself the question, what are the possible positive interpretations to that event? What are the positive meanings, possible positive meanings I could associate with this event? I'll reaffirm David's point that no event has any meaning other than the meaning that we give it. So be aware, pay attention to how you feel. And if you're feeling bad about something, it's quite possible that you've interpreted the meaning or given a meaning to that situation as being a bad one, a negative one. And actually, there's the cue. There's your prompt to do a reframe. What are the range of possible meanings that are positive, that are good, that give the other person the benefit of the doubt?
We are great makers of meaning. I love the story there around somebody is caught up in their own world and there's a lot of pressure about opening a new venture, opening a new business. And then we make it about, or there is a tendency to make it about us. What's that all about?
Well, we are at the center of our own world. I mean, and how we choose to place meaning and importance on other things is entirely down to us. I mean, we are the single denominating factor individuals in any one of our lives. And as David says, this is all down to, experience, memory, what we hear from others. So that interpretation, as David quite rightly says, is here to keep us safe and alive, but we can only do that from our point of view. I think what some of the book allows us to do is just step out of where we are and who we are. There's an amazing quote by Lao Tse, which is, "When I let go of who I am, I become what I might be." And I think that some of the book is encouraging us to step out of how we've created meaning and really have a look at what's going on and how can we unlock, as David says, infinite possibility.
I think
I just want to just probe that point, that moment of meaning making, because the meaning that we make of something has an instantaneous impact on our behavior and following in your model and the reaction that our behavior gets. So if we find ourselves heading, we might even not be consciously aware of a choice that we've made to fear the worst and make it about us and have a negative scenario that is concocted in our mind as a result of a particular event. How can we catch ourselves in the moment and open our mind up to other potential meanings?
Sorry, David, I thought you were going
to go. Oh, sorry. Yes. I mean, first of all, I think to answer that question, the thing that Claire and I have in common, apart from a desire and great belief in the human spirit, is that we're interested in people and the way they actually are, not in the way a lot of organizations talk about authenticity as some kind of pedestal that people need to aspire to be. And Naked, and Claire Carpenter, of course, has the brand, The Naked Psychologist, which is a brilliant brand, is really about the way we actually are. And the way we actually are is that life is one big game of improv. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to say next. You don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know how you're going to respond to me. And that gives us an opportunity. I'll give you a great example. I think the way to do it is really, really something I'm not very good at, is really listen. Listen to what's being said. Listen to what's not being said. So our children are slightly older than your respective children. But it doesn't stop them coming home and basically reverting to being children at home and treating me in the same way they did when they were teenagers. And I found that just listening, repeating back what they're saying, giving myself a little bit of time to think. So, for example, one of my children, when they were younger, said, "I hate you, Dad." And it's very easy to say, "Well, that's not a very nice thing to say, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And I just said to them, "Well, I love you as well." And they sort of stormed out of the room. So my answer, Claire may have a separate answer. My answer would be, and we put this in the book, imagine if every single thing that ever happened to you happens in order to help you achieve your outcome and those closest to you achieve theirs. That switch is really quite extraordinary and introduces all sorts of synchronicity and serendipity. That would be my answer, to actually go to the extreme. I think we work in extremes because the brain wants to conserve energy. We work in extremes. You know what it's like. Oh my goodness, that person didn't look like they were going to go jump on that crossing at that moment when I was driving, so I've had to brake hard. What are people like? That's what we do. In order to complete the brain, we sort of think of one thing as meaning absolutely everything. And I think for me, you know, you could start here and say, "Oh, I'm not sure I always have control over these things, Gavin, you know, and it's always about me and I want to change." And you can kind of think of techniques that get you there and there and there. And I decided just to go to the technique that, do you know what? Everything that ever happens, happens in order to help me and help other people. For example, with this book, Claire and I have had our challenges. And so a lot of fun, by the way, is we're very, very close and great respect. But, you know, writing a book together remotely, by the way, is a really tough thing to do. And in the end, I just decided that whatever Claire said to me actually proves we're going to get this book written. And, you know, she and I are on board together. And although we may see the world slightly differently, everything is fine. And I've had to call on that a few times with Claire and also with myself. And I'm sure she's definitely had to do that with regard to me. So that's what I would say. Imagine if everything that ever happened actually helps you and those who's close to you.
I love that. That's a really powerful distinction. So what was, so for me, of those four stages, event, meaning, behavior, reaction, it's for me, the critical, the pivotal stage is the meaning piece.
Yeah.
So when somebody's caught up in their world, and so I get the usefulness of right, this is meant to happen. This is going to help me. This is going to help me achieve my goals. That's great. But in the midst of the emotion that might be bubbling away, that mammalian brain's already set a path of trend of thinking, you know, what other sort of hints or ideas can you give or strategies to give to help shift somebody's meaning? Because initially that thought of this is going to help me, somebody might think, it doesn't feel like that right now. I've got this new business depending on the clientele and my most favorite customer is not here. You know, it's having that ability to interrupt that pattern.
Yeah, I think one of the most important words that you've just said there, Gavin, is emotion. And yeah, when we feel in the thick of a very powerful emotion, sometimes, and I do it, most people do it, we become that emotion rather than feel it, acknowledge it, put it to one side. And as David says, take a step back and take time to breathe. I think one of the most important questions that we can ask ourselves is, what if? So what if it didn't have this meaning? What if it could be interpreted differently? What if I stepped into somebody else's shoes and saw the situation from a very different point of view? And I think that those two things, feeling the emotion but not being the emotion, and asking yourself what if, can really help recast and reattribute meaning.
Feeling the emotion and not being the emotion.
Yeah, did you hear
what
that?
What if? Yeah, I love that. Honestly, and I love that distinction that if you could just say what if in the moment, because that's it's obviously a question of opens up possibility, it opens up another potential meaning. And as if you can get that chink of light of another possible reality, because it could feel like a reality in the moment for that individual, then you've got the first stage in being able to craft a different meaning. What if? Yeah, I agree with that. I want to write it down. Was it feeling the emotion, not being
feeling
emotion?
The emotion, not being the emotion. So feel it, acknowledge it, and be able to respect where you are and put that to one side. And then with a clear, cool voice of calm, ask yourself, what if? Go make a cup of tea.
But there's a great example of that, which is about whether somebody's wrong or right. And you know, I saw my son for a dinner on Tuesday night, and he's absolutely obsessed that the 100 in cricket is not as good as the T20. And there's nothing I could say that would change that. So I said, you know what, I can actually see your point of view. I see why the T20 might be considered to be better. Which, of course, he immediately said, well, no, I get the 100 as well. I think it's really exciting. And because of this thing called reciprocity, if you give ground, And do it sincerely, because I did, because he wasn't going to change his point of view, because you should never tell somebody they're wrong, even if they are. But if you give ground, then they're more likely to come back. And it all comes down, I think it all comes down, Gavin, and I, Claire, you and I talk about this all the time, is what's your outcome? And I know it's not easy in the moment of a sort of difficulty in your business or difficulty in a relationship or difficulty with just something going on, could be anything, to sort of say to yourself, what's your outcome? And it takes practice. But do you know what? I think it is possible. I think it is possible. Well, we know it's possible.
You start chapter 3 off with this really brilliant quote. Happiness is not an ideal of reason, but one of imagination, by Immanuel Kant. It's one of imagination. And then you go on to say that happiness is not the end point, it's the starting point. What do you mean by that?
I'll give you the analogy, and then I'm sure Claire will have a proper point of view rather than my just general ramblings. At the moment, a lot of organisations are going through real dilemmas. They're desperate to survive. They're desperate to come up with a new strategy. They're desperate for stability.
So true.
And they're kind of saying to us in Naked Leader, look, I get well-being and happiness and you know, our people looking after our people, but that has to wait. And I think the analogy I'd use to what you've said is actually that's the cause. It's the well-being of people that is the cause, not the symptom. And if you actually address that first, and if we address happiness of the world first, to use a big phrase, and if we help people who really need help first, then that's when other things happen. So I think a lot of our book, and certainly thanks to Claire's massive input on this, is it was Claire really that taught me that being well is not a result. It's an absolute cornerstone. And once you're well, then you can do all sorts of other things. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think what you actually brilliant did was sort of queued up that profound quote from a six-year-old. Change the I in illness to we to get wellness. And I went, whoa, that's amazing. Change the I in illness to we, and then you get wellness. And that opens up what you were just starting to talk to about, is about that it's our interactions with others, and it's our ability to find happiness through relationships, through collaboration, through shared experience. So why is this so, it's obviously been challenged over the last 18 months, Claire, but from a psychology point of view, why is that working with finding happiness through each other? Why is that so essential, or why does it have such an impact on us?
Well, I think what we've all learned, and we're all in our separate places talking today, what we've all learned through lockdown is the absolute importance and magic of human connection. And we've all been missing that. And I think it's almost enabled us, I'll talk to myself, it's enabled me to get to a point where I can really value that rather than take it for granted. So rather than looking back on the last 18 months and thinking, gosh, haven't I missed a lot? I think I'm coming forward from today and thinking, gosh, I've really gained a lot. And to be honest, the mind is everything. What you think, you do become. So if we approach things really positively from an abundance mindset, and surround ourselves with people who are equally positive, take the ego out of things as well. If I'm not in the center of my world, if winning doesn't matter so much to me, if being right doesn't matter, but the outcome does, then that's really important. And all of that will go to spark really positive human interactions, which are the basis of revival, revival of us as individuals, revival of our communities, of our society, and of our wider country and world, I think.
We've got to knit together to kind of two threads there that from both of you about clarity of outcome. But what if you've got differing outcomes? That I think we'll go back to your point, David, about reciprocity and about giving ground to gain ground. So how do we achieve that happiness with a focus where with others when our outcomes may, I choose my words carefully, appear to be different?
Well, the idea of bliss that Claire and I have put together really is that once you are truly happy, it's not about you. It's about other people, because you don't have to steal from other people. You don't have to disagree with people. You don't have to argue with people, because you're so confident in being yourself. You become your own best friend, effectively. And I think once that happens, it sorts out a lot of the petty discussions and debates and disagreements that people have in life. And we do have so many different petty ones. However, if you're talking about a fundamental difference of outcomes, then I think it's important to acknowledge those are two different outcomes and talk it through But certainly since writing Bliss and discovering Claire's approach to this from a psychology point of view, it's given me a lot more confidence to actually do some of the things that we've written about in the book, because I know that they're backed up by proper academia and research and science. And they've worked spectacularly well. So, it's a difficult one. Claire may be able to answer it, but I suppose if you had a different outcome than maybe a loved one, then that could be quite serious. But generally speaking, I mean, we don't have that many outcomes we can't give in on. I just wish I'd known this stuff when the children were younger, because the worst thing you'd ever say is we're going to have a movie night tonight. And, you know, you two can decide which one you watch. And of course, Olivia wanted to watch one and Anthony wanted to watch the other. And we took a vote. And if we watched the one Anthony wanted to, Olivia sat there saying what crap it was and vice versa. And it's amazing. I think the other thing COVID has brought us together, as Claire has brilliantly put it, is what's important in life. What's important? And I've certainly discovered what's important over the last, you know, several years. And I think a lot of people have.
I'd also say how much I've learned from David, really, really focusing on outcome. I think, Gavin, where you started was what happens if you've got two different outcomes. But I think some of what we're exploring is reducing this sort of black, white, on, off dichotomy of things, and actually using our differences positive and a creative tension. And I think if you have a scarcity mindset, you just believe that if one person wins and another person loses. But if you come at this with happiness and joy and abundance, what you can do, even with two quite different outcomes, as long as they are not diametrically opposed, is to create win-win conditions in life to maybe look to for a way for both parties to have a sense of positive outcome, accomplishment, and a better feeling about what can be achieved.
And we've touched on that in the book. And I had an audition for a TEDx, and I failed. In the middle of the audition, I often talk about success and why people don't achieve success by their own definition. And then I go on about, you know, not necessarily having the right skills or having the right contacts or formulas for success and all that sort of thing. But on this particular occasion, I just switched, and it was during the writing of this book, and Claire's been a big influence in getting me to switch. And I said, you know, you might be wondering why you don't achieve success more often. And the answer is, you do. And we do. I just think that one thing that we've discovered over the last 2 years is we achieve success every single day. I think if people recorded their successes from the moment they woke up, and just imagine, Gavin, if when you wake up, you shout around the house, hey, I've successfully woken up. Hey, I've successfully got out of bed. I've successfully cleaned my teeth. I've successfully had breakfast. I mean, we achieve success so often. And I think that when you get into that abundance mindset and you notice other people saying it, I mean, we've got stickers in the house that Anthony bought us, little well done stickers, you know, and you know, I managed to, he came home to sleep here the other night, and the landing light was off, and and it was keeping him awake. And rather than him getting up, I went off and turned it off. And the following one, he stuck a sticker on me saying, well done, you knew how to turn the light off. And, you know, and I think turning life into a game, which, let's be honest, it is, because we make it up as we go along. It's an important game, nevertheless, but it is a game. You know, little things like that help what Claire talks about with regard to the abundance mindset. And if there is anything to come out of this terrible COVID experience, it is to realize how precious it is in the years we have I'm sure we've all known people who have lost their lives or been ill with COVID, and to really value other people and catch them doing things right, as was in the 1 Minute Manager, which is up there somewhere.
Yeah. Hi, Gavin here. Feeling the emotion and not being the emotion. That really stood out to me. I love that. You know, asking that question, what if it didn't pan out that way? What if it didn't pan out that way? What if I looked at it through the eyes of another person, the other person and the interaction that you might be having a disagreement with? Feeling the emotion and not being the emotion. Feel it, acknowledge it, stay calm, review it, analyze it, go make a cup of tea, as Claire said. The other thing to be really clear on, as David reinforced, was about what's your outcome. What do you want to achieve out of that interaction or out of the situation that you're in? When you've got a problem and faced with a problem in business or in life, most of the time the focus is on what's the problem, what's the problem, what's the problem? Start with what's the outcome. You need to clearly state your understanding of the problem, so everybody's on the same page, so everybody has a shared appreciation of the situation as it is, not more than it is, not less than it is, as it is. And then you quickly switch your focus to what's the outcome. You know, you may have heard me use the sat nav analogy before. You put a precise destination into your sat nav and you come across traffic jam, a roadblock. The sat nav doesn't freak out and go, oh my god, there's a roadblock. The sat nav just says, okay, well, here rerouting, here's some new options to get to your destination. But it can only do that by starting from the point of the destination, starting from the point of outcome. So we've really got to bring ourselves back every time to what's the outcome, what's the outcome, what's the outcome. Another gem from that section was change the I in illness to we in wellness. Wow, that's profound. I love that. Change the I in illness to we in wellness. Once you're truly happy, you become your own best friend. It's not about you, it's about others. And using differences we have as with others as a positive is just a creative tension. Approach challenges with happiness and abundance. Look for the win-win.
So you talk about the importance of humility in the book and about the importance about humility in achieving and experiencing happiness. Why is humility important?
I'll let Claire go first because no one's more humble than I am.
I think humility is all about making sure that we take ego out of everything. And once we take ego out of how we experience the world, how we look at the world, how we interpret things, we can just make sure that we have that better clarity of vision. And but also we can spot opportunities where we can help and positively connect with people. And I think if you've got real humility, you can take a look at what you have in life and you will always have more. So if you're quite humble, you will always be grateful for what you've done, what you've achieved, what friends you have, the connections you make, even some of the more difficult meetings that we have in everyday life. And, you know, rather than thinking, oh, my goodness, I'm rubbish or I don't have enough, that humility just opens out a lot of different possibilities by taking ego out of the equation, I think.
And I think in so doing, you don't show up into certain scenarios projecting yourself as something other than you are. You back to David's word around authenticity, you're showing up being your beautiful, vulnerable, flawed self. Yeah. And so doing, you open the space for a more genuine conversation interaction where there's less games being played.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Gavin. And I think what humility enables us to do is to not fight our corner all the time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if people disagree. It doesn't matter if people really don't like what I'm saying. I stand for what I stand for. I'm sharing my truth. I am living my best life in the best way that I know how to. I'm also open to other people's and other ideas, but I don't have to come at this from a weary position where I have to protect myself the whole time. Yeah.
Go on, David.
We've tried to reflect that in the book. We basically say to people, there's only what works, what doesn't work, as you know. And if something that Claire has said works, then do more of it. Then something I said doesn't work, then do something opposite. But I think, Gavin, you've hit on a real critical part here in our history, because I'm certainly getting the impression that I was wrong. I need help. It's my fault. And now becoming lines of great strength and honesty and openness that people used to use as sort of signs of weakness. And, you know, as you both know, we've been doing well-being calls with the NHS and the Samaritans and the hospice movement. And it's extraordinary how people knowing it's okay to feel as they do. It's okay to say, I don't know something. It's okay to feel low. It's okay to this. Then there's an amazing strength in that. And I think that as a result of what we've been going through, and probably as a result of many other factors as well, we are going to come out of this with a great deal more sort of kindness around leadership, I think, than we've had before.
Okay, so I want to finish off with some sort of quick fire tips, really, from both of you around experiencing more happiness or more bliss on a regular basis. It may come from points of awareness, but what are some of the things that people listening and watching to this interview could do, could incorporate into some kind of a practice on a regular basis that would help them in experience a greater levels of happiness and bliss?
I've got a couple of tips and that I don't mind sharing. So on my kitchen wall, I've just got a whole wall of pictures of all those people who are incredibly dear to me, my friends and family. And it's whenever I feel down, whenever I need inspiration, I go down to the kitchen and look at that wall and know that those people are absolutely with me, and it gives me strength. Another really easy little thing to do, and I have to admit, when I first started doing this, I was a bit skeptical, but it does work, is just keep a gratitude journal. Try and find three things every day, three new things that you are great, that you're grateful for. And in 21 days, what that does to your brain is it actively retrained you not to focus on the bad stuff in the news or what may not have gone well. It retrained you to focus on the positive, and it actually rewires those neural networks, and it enables you to look for the positive. So those are probably my two little everyday tips.
Thank you, Claire. I love that. David?
Well, first of all, Claire's spot on. I mean, here's my journal. And what this does is it opens you up to seeing the magic in ordinary things.
We've got the same book. I don't ever know.
For example, they didn't take our recycling away last Friday because they were short-staffed and the whole road was moaning about it. And I put in my happy book, my recycling is going to be taken away next week instead of this week. And it was. And it went into the happy journal. By the way, am I on the wall, Claire?
Of course you are, David.
Just wanted to double check that.
Am I in your gratitude book?
Yes, it's named after you somewhere. I think we did a pre-call on this, and I wrote we call each other CC and DT, and I a whole page about you. That's quite nice.
Go on, David, give me some tips.
Sorry. Don't just catch yourself doing things right, but don't just catch yourself doing things right. Ask yourself a question when you've caught yourself doing something right. Gosh, why am I so good at eating? Why am I so good at opening doors? Why am I so good at feeding the cats? And that bypasses whether you are good at it, and it asks you what's behind it. That's my first one. The second one is basically get somebody who can be like a sister or a brother to you. Get somebody who can think like you do, but also have some differences and write a book with them. And that's what happened with me and Claire. I've written quite a few books on my own, as you know, Gavin, but most of those were due to cut and paste. When you have somebody in your life, like I've got Claire in mine, who you know you can ask any question of or get any academic reference, or she's not just an academic, she's also lives an academic in the real world. I recommend anyone out there, have a buddy, if you like, have a buddy, because that's what I've got in Claire. Whether she has it, and clearly she has it.
Yeah, no, it's been great. And I've had so much learning from you as well. It's been a brilliant experience. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And the biggest one is the thing that we've been using with the Samaritans have started using, and it didn't come from us. I don't think anything, as you know, Gavin, that I've ever thought of came from me. And it's okay. It's just it's okay. It's always okay, even when it's not, and that's okay as well. A new campaign the Samaritans are using, and I don't want to end on a low note, but the suicide rate has gone up obviously during COVID, and we're battling against that. So let people know however you feel is okay. So I think that's a pretty powerful one that I certainly adopt, and I recommend other people do as well.
I'd like to just close on a personal kind of little case study of a number of the points that you just talked about outcome, buddy, humility, noticing what's working, putting the ego to one side, has actually generated and increasingly so a lot of happiness for me. So I've recently been accepted onto the lifeboat crew for Llandudno. It's near where I live in North Wales. And it's something, I'm really at the induction stage. Induction started only this week. There's a good number of months of training ahead before I get anywhere near the water. But it's a boyhood dream. I've wanted to do it for a long time. I'm not into football. My boys don't know anything about football, but they can list and name every spotlight lifeboat. They can list all the lifeboats. So I am a massive fan of the RNLI, and I'm so humbled and privileged to have been accepted into the crew.
That's amazing.
Thank you. And one of the things that David knows, I've sailed since I was four. I spent a lot of time around the water and the sea. And they're very clear that they say that everybody has to be trained exactly the same way to do each of the different procedures, so that if you're out, you know, at sea in the winter, in the dark, and it's blowing a gale and you can't be heard to each other, you want to know that your crew mate next to you is going to do things in exactly the same way. And it makes total sense. There's another guy on the crew who basically is the first officer on a super yacht, is eminently equipped and trained and experienced. And yet when he's not off being super yacht, you know, first officer, he has had to go through each of the same stages of the training. So I have to turn up with humility, irrespective of my experience, and learn it and the way. And I really understand and respect the logic for that. So, I'm enjoying that relearning process. That's the first thing. Second thing, well, the outcome's clear. It's saving lives at sea. And the first time, I haven't yet got the pager, but my phone will now go off. 5:15, I was woken on Saturday morning from a deep sleep. Where am I? And then made my way to the station. And the three guys that went out on the inshore boat literally pulled a guy out of the water who decided it was a good idea to go for a swim drunk at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they saved a life. And I just thought, wow. You know, it's like my synapses were going, you've just started thinking about those three guys, just normal guys. They started off their weekend by pulling somebody out of the water and saving their life. And how amazing was that? And then notice what's working. That morning I got there and I thought I got there quite quickly and the boat was being launched when I got there. And it would be very easy for me to say, oh, I'm never going to be able, because those two of the three guys literally live within a minute's journey from the station and I live 5 minutes away. And but I thought, no, I got here. I showed up. I turned up. Last night, it went at 20 past eight at night and I got there. And if I had been trained, I would have got onto the boat. So you can see I'm quite animated by this. But the things that you've been talking about, oh, yes, and having a buddy, I've been matched together with a buddy. I've met him. He's great. Tell me the way that things work. So the things that you naturally talk about through your insights that you've got from collaborating and, you know, writing Bliss, you know, How to Be Truly Happy for the Rest of Your Life, I'm having a very current and real experience that is generating that happiness in my world too.
Well, Gavin, that's a fantastic story. And Gavin and I have known each other for years, and he is a living embodiment for everything, Claire, that you believe in and I believe in. And, you know, for you to say that you read it and you enjoyed it means an awful lot to us.
Claire, David, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for working together with one outcome about helping the people that you read your book, which I hope and I encourage you to read, and I'm sure the audiobook will be phenomenal. Is to get yourself a copy of Bliss, How to Be Truly Happy for the Rest of Your Life. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed reading sort of an advanced copy of your book. So when's the book out? When can people get hold of Bliss?
They'll be able to get hold of it from Friday, the 1st of October.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so both so very much. I'm looking forward to the audiobook when that comes. And I really encourage that for anybody listening. How can they find out more about you and find out the work that you do?
I am on the nakedpsychologist.com, and I am the behavioral advisor for the psychologist to Naked Leader too, so I should feature there, and it would be a pleasure to hear from anyone. Can I just end with a quote? Would that be okay?
I love quotes, go for it.
All right, so one of my most inspiring quotes is by Emile Zola, and she says, "If you ask me what I came into this life to do, I will tell you that I came to live my life out loud." And I think that Bliss will really help people positively live their lives out loud. And that's what it's
about. I love that. I love that. David, how can people find out about you?
And sorry, that's just an amazing quote. And nakedleader.com and the home of real leadership. .com, but nakedleader.com is the main one at the moment.
So if you want
sorry Gavin, and social media, thanks to our amazing goddaughter and her team at Naked Leader across social media. Thanks, Gavin.
Thank you. So if you want to live your life out loud, then grab yourself a copy from the 1st of October of Bliss, How to Be Truly Happy for the Rest of Your Life. Claire Carpenter, David Taylor, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Business Mastermind podcast with myself, Gavin Preston. You know, we love to hear from you. Let me know what you think. Like, review and subscribe on whichever podcast platform you listen to us on. It does make a difference. If you are a regular listener, why not buy us a coffee? You can do this by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/businessmaster. You'll also be able to get access to exclusive content from the guests and myself, further insights and information on the featured episodes, and how you can get more access for yourself and your business.